All right, good morning, boys and girls, friends and family, maybe even some foes. Hope not, but wanted to wish everybody a good morning. We are back. It's Wednesday, hump day. Thanks for joining us. Looks like we got a few people up on stage. And sure, just as I come on the mic, my fertilizer guy comes out. So if you hear some interesting sounds today, that's why. But we're at it again. It's Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 266, where we talk about Bitcoin and other things. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'll be your host this morning. Yes, fully doxed. And it's another great morning with producer Eric. He always surprises me and probably you too with his music. We'll try to get him on track. Just kidding. Thanks for that, Eric. We have our normal co-host may be coming up, Texas Toast. We're going to start calling him Tardy Toast. That's okay. Busy dude. We'll get him up here. We also have TC again. Awesome to have you. We have Eric, Neil, Captain Trips, Pobby, and BFP. So exciting stuff. Thank you again to everybody who listens each and every day. We do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. And today is Wednesday, September 17th, 2025. We are at Bitcoin block height number 915,117, with the Bitcoin price hovering just above $116,000, which means you can still get rid of your cuckbucks for 862 sats. And I am not giving you financial advice, but I would advise you to strongly consider that if you're still holding on to any of that dirty fiat. All right, a couple of announcements. Check out the Nest, please. We do have sponsorship opportunities available for that conference I've been announcing every day endlessly. We're having the Bitcoin Veterans second annual summit coming up November 10th and 11th. Beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. Day one will be the conference, and I think a lot of people are excited about range day on day two. Get out some of, get some practice on the range. So that should be fun, and we'll keep it safe and should be good. But if you're interested, go to bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025 and, yeah, get your tickets. If you want to apply to be a speaker, you can do that there. If you want to be a volunteer or maybe run a workshop, let's get hands on and help people understand how all of this stuff works with Bitcoin. All right, let's see, what else? Yeah, getting a full crowd in here, and do appreciate everybody coming in. Wanted to first go around the horn and say good morning. TC, you're right next to me here on my screen. How's it going this morning, sir?
Good morning, just getting the coffee fired up. It was fun chatting with you yesterday.
Yeah, again, thanks for coming up. And again, guys, check out TC's app. You can follow the TimeChain Cal handle here on X and get all the updates, the main information as it comes out. Follow TC as well and everybody else who always comes up here and talks. Hey, Tardy Toast, thanks for joining. How's it going this morning?
What up? Oh, I had to do a little worship this morning with one of my kiddos. So yeah, busy guy, you know, some people got to work around here, Bob.
All right. We'll hit it out.
This is my work. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. No, I got it. It's all good, man. I just got to give you some, yeah, a little bit of shade here and there. Wade. Hey, thanks for coming up. Good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, guys. Just pulling a couple interesting headlines up for you guys if you get time later in the show.
Yeah, man, this is kind of open hump day because I've been swamped and it's a good thing, but don't have as much time lately, it seems, for show prep. So TC bailed me out yesterday. He didn't know it, but it kind of helped him too, I hope. More downloads than ever. We'll say that every day, hopefully. Eric, good morning. Do you have a proper mic or are you just going to give us a thumbs up and make everybody think you're AI?
No, I'm here. I don't have a proper mic, but good morning.
Well, it's okay. I know you're still trying to save those sats, so yeah, don't buy a mic. You can just talk through the BB handle. It's all good. Neil, good morning. We missed you yesterday. Welcome back.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good to be back. Had a great conversation yesterday with Daniel Prince, and I don't know, that podcast will be coming out, I think, in a couple of weeks. Me hitting, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting seeing how, like, the more people you talk to and how you refine the message and you hone it, and it just I don't know. It's kind of a cool thing to see how this all unfolds. It's a pretty fun journey.
Yeah, we always like to support the folks who come on here regularly. So when that does come out, there drops, please do throw that up in the nest or throw it in the comments. Would love to check it out. Captain Trips, it's been a couple of days. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. Nice to be here. Happy hump day.
Yes, sir, Pubby.
I think it's total bullshit that TC had 58 minutes of the 60 yesterday, and he got to go first today to say hello. No, just kidding. TC, great job as always. Daniel Prince is awesome. And he was the first one that really come on a YouTube show with us. We once had a 4-hour just live stream YouTube back in the day. And I was reminded about how early things are. Someone was hosting a space today with a bunch of newbies trying to explain to them what HODL meant and where it came from in the old Twitter lore with just one typo. So it's always good to take a step back and remember how much you didn't know when you started here. But happy hump day.
Back to the basics. I love it. BFP, how are you today?
Hey, good morning, Bob. Yeah, I read Daniel Prince's book as one of the first Bitcoin books I read back in the day. He wasn't even a full-time Bitcoiner when that first, I mean, he was in the cryptocurrency, but he became a Bitcoin maxi after that. But yeah, congrats on getting on his show.
Yeah, good stuff. We'll be excited to hear it. And really today, guys, we can take this anywhere people want to go. I have a few things that kind of crossed the wire in my mind. First, though, before we jump into those topics, I was thinking, like, man, there is so many, you know, things that are coming out that are seemingly positive news, you know, despite obviously what happened last week. I think if you're on these spaces, maybe you hear a little bit too much negativity here and there about the sides. But as it relates to Bitcoin, and that's what we try to keep it to mostly on this show, is like, man, there's just a ton of adoption news, a ton of building going on. Sure, there's some infighting, but there's so many positive things happening. And one of the things that I really took away from yesterday with TC is the fact that so many people still do focus so much on price. And sure, during my opening every morning, I do bring up the block height and the price, but that's really mainly to encourage you to stack sats. And but I have been thinking, like, are we desensitized from all this good news? What do you guys think? Like, there's so many positive things going on, and you just see adoption occurring and the current financial system falling on its face. And so I'm just wondering, like, do you guys pay much attention to the news anymore? Or is it really like we should just sit on these spaces and talk philosophically and let Neil go through his book with us every day? What do you guys think?
I can jump in real quick, because when you're here long enough, it was like any little thing, any bit of news was, oh my God, this is it. Bitcoin's going to be a million tomorrow. And it was at a point, I remember listening when they were having a Chinese New Year and everybody was hanging their hat on the fact, you guys don't understand, this is like the biggest human migration in the world. And when all these Chinese, they get home and they start telling their family about Bitcoin, just wait until you see this pump that happens. And it's all the time. And, you know, Elon's buying, all this company's buying. Everyone waits, it happens. And it's like, for every one of those, though, guess what? You get an FTX. For every one of those, you just get debates. And you just get, like I say, man, you just got to be in it for the long term. It's cool, like, to dream on some of that stuff. But, yeah, you get desensitized to it. You get desensitized to the price. We used to be, you know, high-fiving each other if it went up $1,000. Now, you know, it drops 10, 15, goes up 10, 15. Like, who cares anymore? But welcome to the show.
Yeah, I could chime in on this. I think the only sort of problematic thing is that last part, which is so it's going to make a crazy pump happen right away. You know, I really actually find that keeping up with what's going on in the world is incredibly confirming as far as the Bitcoin thesis, because almost every day you see more instances of governments around the world debasing their citizens' currency, restricting their citizens' freedom, using financial rails as a weapon. I think it was yesterday there was some news. I can't remember if it was Thailand or Vietnam, but somewhere in Southeast Asia where they were just shutting down millions of people's accounts because they hadn't registered with the new digital ID system. It is wild when you put it together. What's the problem and how does Bitcoin solve that problem? And then to see that exact dynamic repeat itself again and again and again. And I'll just tell you, over the last 5.5 years since 2020, hasn't it been just pronounced? Hasn't it been just more obvious than ever? And so, yeah, I think that's the purpose. I think if you just keep up with what's going on in the world, you see the problem growing and henceforth Bitcoin becoming more and more relevant. All this, oh, so tomorrow it's going to go to the moon. Put that aside, just as far as reinforcing your own conviction in what you are doing and what your plan is and being able to sit tight amidst all this chaos and say, well, at least I have my life raft.
Yeah, it's really good. And I do think, like, you know, for the new people, I think gaining perspective on some of these news stories that you and I and a lot of other folks up here and in this space, see so easily, cause like you said, you're kind of putting the pieces of the puzzle together. And, but for the new people, it maybe gives them a new lens. And so, you know, sometimes we ebb and flow on this space, like where we talk about news, obviously, but that gets a little boring. And sometimes we get more philosophical and a lot of times we can bring those things together, which I really enjoy, cause I do think it serves, as TC was saying, a really good purpose for those of us who, you know, are paying attention to this stuff, but again, is a great way to maybe get other people who are newer thinking about some of these things, in a way that maybe they haven't before, and why we're so adamant about, stacking Bitcoin and holding Bitcoin. Neil, I see your hand, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just a kind of few thoughts on, like, on price. It's just like, so pulling, like, this is goes back to, like, Aristotle and Aquinas, this idea that, nothing goes into the intellect, into your mind, that's not first through your senses. Like, we're embodied, you know, creatures or whatever. So what price is doing, like the accident of price, it's like, it's letting someone feel it. It's letting someone experience it. It's giving them a particular, something to focus on to then abstract and think about what's going on with that thing. So it's just like, you know, price is, it's everything and it's nothing at the same time in the sense that, like, it really doesn't have anything to do with the principles. Like, it can go up 20% or down 50% today and it doesn't fucking matter at all. It's just an accident. It goes up and down. But at the same time, like, that's the thing that people can touch. It's like the tangent between their human experience, something that they already know, and learning something new. So like, that's kind of, you know, so we should never throw it, we should never completely discount the importance of it, because without price, without this fiat price, no one has a bridge to even like reach out to try to like even cognize like what Bitcoin even is, you know, like if you dissolve the price, you know, entirely, there's no way that you could onboard anybody. There's really no way you could even talk to people, and get those ideas into their head. So I think that that's kind of like an interesting way of like, you use price as like the on-ramp, you use price as that particular thing that you know that they can relate to. And that's how, like, as TC was saying, like, it plays out all the time the same. It's because like human nature is immutable. And like, this is just how humans interact and react to their environment. So it's like, when you understand the principles, you understand what's going on. You can kind of see, you can see where the puck is going, you know, even if it's, you know, bumpy up and down along the way, like that, like being able to discern the order, and see where things are going. Like that's what makes human beings rational creatures. And when you lean into that and you leverage that and you become the, you know, a powerful human being, you know, actualizing all your potential, like that's what Bitcoiners are doing. That's why Bitcoiners feel alive. That's why Bitcoiners are becoming powerful thing, like powerful beings in their communities. And like the tides are turning. So I don't know. Those are just my thoughts.
Yeah. I like that. And I think, you know, it gets me thinking, you missed yesterday when, I made one of my comments. I mean, I loved your comments, Neil, but, one of the things besides price is some of these tools, and not to make this, you know, a repeat of yesterday, but I do think you should check out timechaincalendar.com if you haven't, because I do think that that does materialize Bitcoin for a lot of people. Especially like maybe not initially, right? If you show people that app or the web app, initially, they're going to be like, I don't know what the heck that is. Like that means absolutely nothing to me. But as people are going on their journey, that dashboard, while it does show the exchange price, it's also showing you a lot more, that this is a live, active network that can be monitored in a variety of ways. And this dashboard is giving you just some insights as to how, people can kind of materialize Bitcoin beyond just the price. So Neil, totally agree with your comments, but did want to throw that back out there. And I think, you know, TC would admit there's other tools out there as well. And I think people are building right now, and I'm excited to see how, you know, this, this network and this asset that lives on the internet kind of all by itself, and you know, we're interacting with it, but giving people good information, so they can actually see it, understand it, and learn more about how to take advantage of it. I think Wade's hand was first, but before we go to Wade, did want to say good morning to Robert. He's joined us. I did ask him if he had some time and do want to get to some, topics around macro. I know some people roll their eyes on that stuff, but there's a lot going on. We got Miran, however you say his last name, joining the FRB. We got Fed rate cuts probably, it looks like, today. So I do want to get an update from him in a little bit, but we got a couple hands. Let's go to Wade first.
Good morning, guys. I actually have a question for Robert. I just need a second to frame the question. This week, the GAO released its September report on the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program. Inside the report, they document that the life cycle of the program costs will now exceed $2 trillion. They cite contractor underperformance, delays, and supply chain issues as reasons for the cost overruns. Lockheed Martin and Pratt & Whitney are continuing to deliver aircraft and engines late. One instance that is cited here in the report, of the 110 aircraft that were delivered this year, all were late by an average of almost 240 days. That's up from a delivery delay of 61 days going back to 2023. So we're seeing the increased supply chain pressure and issues coming in here. Just wanted to ask that, want to use that context to frame the question. Is it now that the program is effectively reporting a $2 trillion cost overrun, which is equal to 7% of the current national debt, that all of the GAO's assumptions regarding these cost overruns are based upon the Fed and the CBO target of a 2% inflation rate? And just wondering what info's like thoughts are regarding a 50% miss, if we've got an admitted 3% inflation here by the government, I mean, how are we supposed to review, what's his thoughts regarding, hey, we have a reported 50% inflation over target here, but yet we're basing all of our assumptions and all of our CBO and GAO reports on a 2% inflation target.
Yeah, PCE, CPI, PPI, everything's closer to 3% than it is to 2%. I think that the one thing that they have going for them is that when it comes to the deficit, is that they will be trying to reduce interest expense. The problem is that it's going to come at the expense of weaker currency, both in purchasing power and depending on what other countries do. This move in the dollar yesterday, I think is significant. Depending on what other countries do, possibly even a weaker dollar relative to other currencies. I think that they've abandoned any hope of fiscal responsibility. I think Doge is dead and in the ground. I think that when it comes like defense specifically, if I had to guess, they're going to just say, okay, well, now the U.S. government is a 10% equity owner in whatever, Lockheed Martin. Howard Lutnick actually talked about that. I think it was before the election. I think, he was on Pomp's, show and he talked about, taking equity stakes in some of the defense contractors. So, my guess is that it looks probably something more akin to that than anything, but the overall direction is the same thing with Social Security. It's the same thing with Medicare, Medicaid. Until there's consequences, I don't think that politicians from any party are going to step up and be responsible. Medicare, for example, has outpaced GDP and therefore tax revenue, which have grown roughly in line over the past 75 years, outpaced them by like 600%, going back to the early 70s. So these programs, like, it's just up and to the right. And they're in terms of the degree to which they're outpacing GDP, to the degree they're outpacing tax revenue. I think that until we get to a point where they have to, they're not going to. They're not going to be proactive. And that's kind of a scary thought. I mean, this is one of the downsides of liberal democracy when you compare it to something like a country like China, for example, where they can look 100 years into the future. We're constantly looking 2 years in the future, right? This bullshit kind of American political cycle, election cycle where, that's all they're worried about is the next 2 years. Just raise enough money to get reelected a year or two later. And then do it all over again and again and again and again. No one is looking ahead, time preference, parallel there. No one is looking ahead. So I think that it just is going to get worse and worse. It'll be defense. It'll be Medicare, Medicaid. It'll be Social Security. It'll just get worse and worse and worse until eventually something forces them. Is that something the bond market? Is that something the people? Right. Politically, I think that the boomers are clearly dying off. I think it's like 8,000 boomers are dying each day or something crazy. So we know over the next 10 years, 15 years, the youth are of a very different opinion about some of these entitlement programs. And just kind of broadly speaking, have a different view on the role of the government and how the government should function, who it should serve. So I think that we are going to see, not with defense, I mean, that's a kind of a separate thing, but at least with the other entitlement programs, with Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, I think that, what the political landscape today is going to be a lot different from the political landscape 10 years from now. Today, I don't see any chance of responsible cuts to defense, Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. Really, I think it's clear that the big item that they're going after is interest. And look, it'll work. They can do it. I know a lot of people don't want them to be able to do it. They want it to all blow up, but they have a lot of levers, and they'll be able to get the interest expense down. Look, like, there's always a release valve with these things. They could take rates to zero, issue all of the debt in 1 month bills. And, over time, as some of that debt gets rolled and refinanced at the lower rates, you have reduced interest expense. I understand that, like, people don't want that reality, or they don't want the Fed to be able to do that, or the government or whatever, but they can. It is what it is. They always have a lever. The expense, it'll come at the expense of higher inflation. It'll come at the expense of a neutered Fed, and a loss of Fed independence, which, again, is not exactly bullish for the dollar relative to other currencies. So, they can do it. And I think I think they've made it clear that that is, Myron just made up this third mandate, right? This actually is not new news. This goes all the way back to like 2 weeks ago, whenever his confirmation hearing was. In his opening speech, he mentioned this third mandate that doesn't exist for moderate, I forget the exact wording, it's like moderate long-term interest rates, I think. The overall direction is clear. It'll come at look, we're talking about Fed cuts with inflation, no matter how you measure it, basically at 3%, with equities at all-time highs, with gold at all-time highs, with housing at all-time highs. Like, we have to realize kind of where we are. And by the way, the economy's fine. The economy is fine. Whether you look at real GDP, printed 3.3% annual rate Q2, and after the retail sales data yesterday, the Fed now estimate is well above 3. I think it's like 3.5. The economy is fine, So it's not even like, the economy is falling apart and they need rate cuts. My question would be, how is the economy falling apart and equities are at all time highs? Right. But that's a separate issue, but. Yeah, they're cutting because of the interest expense. They're cutting because of fiscal dominance. They're cutting because I think they are smart enough to understand that, yeah, they might be able to hold off this fiscal dominance Trump majority, sort of thing for a month or two but like the overall direction, once you take a couple steps back, the overall direction is Trump will have a majority. It's just a matter of time. So you can try to, him and haw and make a big fuss about it. But like the direction that this is going, once you zoom out, is clear, and it'll come at the expense of the dollar in purchasing power terms for U.S. Consumers. It'll also come at the expense likely of the dollar relative to other currencies, unless you see, other countries, especially like Europe and Japan, starting to go down that same road. Higher real scarce asset prices, whether that's housing or gold or Bitcoin.
How does the government seizing an interest in Intel, Lockheed Martin, or Pratt & Whitney actually get us more chips, more engines, or more aircraft, though? There's historical examples in 1930s Germany where the German Luftwaffe walk into Junkers aircraft and seize the plant. Like, how much did that really help them out? And look at the results of that. It turned them into a vampire economy type scenario. I don't understand how that helps them correct the days late on delivery issues, considering all the bottlenecks.
Yeah, I just think that from a financial standpoint, we're much more likely to see them say, okay, 50% cost overrun. All right, well then we'll be taking an equity stake rather than. And therefore we're going to force the taxpayers to, we're going to run a larger deficit. We're going to force the taxpayers to hold it. I think, and look, like, to some degree, nationalizing Intel, nationalizing, Lockheed or whoever, it at the end of the day, our major adversary being China, it is clear that America cannot really compete with the structure of their economy, with the way that they subsidize industry and run this kind of business model on a national scale, on a sovereign scale, of just overcapacity, market share at any cost, just gain market share. It doesn't matter about profit. Where they manipulate their currency and keep it severely undervalued. Like, how does America, in the, you know, libertarian free market sort of worldview, how else does America, from a national security perspective, compete with that? You know, they can't. At the end of the day, like, I think it's about time that our policymakers finally woke up to the fact that, like, China has been eating our lunch for decades. We are now at a place where we just lost a proxy war to a country with 1/12 of our GDP because we can't make anything anymore. In fact, we rely on China, our adversary, competitor, whatever you want to call them. We rely on them for a lot of the critical electronic components that go into the weapons that we're going to need to defend our people against China. So, you open the book of issues with currencies, right? With the dollar yuan. There's a number of issues where, and I'm not a socialist. I don't wish for this, but like at the end of the day, we live in the world that we do. We can want it to be different. We can want it to be some philosophical utopia that we read about in a book. But it's not, you know what I mean? And so, I think we got to play the hand we're dealt, which is, how else do you, from a national security perspective, how else do you protect yourself against a country like China without stooping to their level, without, running the same playbook, generally speaking, that they do? And look, like, go down the list. I have done this and it didn't radicalize me, but it changed my opinion. I was very much that stereotypical hardcore libertarian, George Gammon, free markets solve everything kind of person. I was very much that sort of way from 2018, really all the way up until a year or two ago. But then I started to learn, dive into the macro hole that I did. And look, like you go down the list, every single country that had, at least in modern kind of post-World War II history, that has done well. Take Japan, for example. Japan Incorporated. They were so ascendant that there were worries from U.S. policymakers, serious people in the U.S., that Japan would overtake America. Well, if you look at their economic structure during that time, they had fiscal policy, trade policy, and monetary policy was all one thing, right? And when you look at GDP, when you look at even for the average Japanese worker, right? Like, overall, the picture was better than after we went liberalized and set them free and showed them free market capitalism and laissez-faire and this neoliberal bullshit. That is what killed them. It was not, from 55 up through 80s where they were, where they had much more of this kind of mixed economy. It was better for the average Japanese worker. It was better for Japan overall. And in fact, they were so ascendant, they were so powerful that there were concerns that they were going to overtake America. Remember, after World War II, America was like the only game in town. Europe was destroyed. They were nowhere near what we are today. Even Japan was destroyed to some degree. It took them a while to rebuild. And there were concerns that they were coming out of it so fast, so hard, that they were going to overtake America. And then you look at China as well. I mean, China was... when you look at China, the growth of China from, say, the 90s up through now, it is like mind blowing. It is almost unbelievable how fast they grew, how much wealth and prosperity was created for them. And look, it came at the expense of the average middle class American. I'm not, I'm the first person to talk about the China shock being a major turning point for the average American. But from we're America. We shouldn't be worrying about Chinese wealth. We shouldn't worry about the middle class of Malaysia or Indonesia. We should be worried about our middle class. We should be worried about our national security imperatives and interests. And I think that is kind of the direction that the world is moving, where everyone is, nationalism one place leads to nationalism everywhere. And I think it's about time that America woke up to that.
Yeah, it gets me thinking, man. We're so asleep at the wheel. I mean, there's so many issues. I like the way you laid all that out, but man, it's crazy. You know, we talked at the top of the show, and I think it was TC and Pubby were kind of saying it, that, you know, this, the reason we keep up on this news and this system is because it's, it gives you that frame of reference for why Bitcoin. We do have some hands. Wanted to get to them. I know BFP was first, but we're on this maybe kind of, line of thinking, and BFP, if it's on a different topic, we'll get to you. Otherwise you can go. If not, Pubby, I think your question was related.
Yeah, mine was way back to Neil, so go ahead. It was the first topic.
Yeah, hold that thought. Yeah. We'll circle back. Go ahead, Pubby.
Yeah, I'll try to make it quick. And this is a term that came up, was entitlements and the number of boomers. And it's such, man, one of the things to look forward to, and it's such a loaded word, right? The connotation, the weaponization of telling everyone, oh, you have an entitlement, like you're entitled to something, not that you've paid into it for your entire life. And I just want to focus people on the division that is coming as these boomers do leave and they're trying to get, claw this money back, is you're entitled to this. Now, God forbid, you know, you put in $200,000 over the course of your career into Social Security, but that's where they're going to have to come and get the properties. Will probably, once they're sold, they're going to go to pay off the loans of many of the kids that are now the Gen X generation. I'm looking at, and we make fun of the boomers. Yeah. Well, they got their house for 7 raspberries in 1976. At the time, that they're just taking advantage of what was there for them to do. Okay. There was really no 401k. Some had a pension, but what I'm saying is just keep an eye out as you watch this go forward. Cause at the end of the day, it is, you will own nothing, right? And be happy. And that's part of the owning nothing, is they're going to remove everything. They're going to remove, you're going to have, and again, the division. Oh, you're so lucky. Oh, you got sub 3% on your mortgage. Oh, your mortgage is paid off. Well, you can afford to pay more then. So unrealized gains on everything and removal of these entitlements that you actually earned. You're not entitled. You earned them. That's what's coming down. So yeah, thanks for letting me rant on that one a little.
Yeah, no, it's good, good perspective. Robert, any other comments on that? You know, I am curious, related to, you know, your thoughts. Obviously, like a lot of people, like eye roll with the Fed, decreasing rates, but I think you brought up some good points. You know, to some people, the economy is fine. To some corporations, I mean, you look at, I don't know if you even want to call it a melt up, but just this, continual, appreciation of assets. And
it's insane.
Yeah. The wealth gap is getting wider. We have people losing jobs. I know a lot of people who write code for a living and are now unemployed. And so I wonder, like, you know, there's this bifurcation of good economy, bad economy. And my question to you is, like, where do you think this goes? Where does it land? I mean, we have the international pressures. We have supply chains that have been farmed out to foreign countries, and that impacts our national defense, among other things. And I mean, there's just so many things that we can run down. And so I'm just curious, like, where does this go, maybe short term and long term, like with rates? And I'm not even talking about price. I'm just saying, like, it looks like all assets are going to just blow out to the upside, and the poor people are going to get poorer, and there's going to be less people with jobs. Like, how does this get fixed?
It gets worse. I think it gets worse. The K-shaped economy gets more K-shaped. And it gets worse. Like, unfortunately, it's not what I want, but objectively that appears to be the direction things are headed in. Housing, everyone keeps saying this. I've been hearing this for, I don't know, 3.5 years. Oh, housing can't possibly, you know, the average sales price can't possibly go up. People can't afford housing. And it's like, well, you can't, I can't. But private equity can, but foreigners can, but, right, to balance the current account deficit, they have to buy something. They're price insensitive buyers. the top 1% can, right? The top 10% certainly can. The top 10%, last time I did the math, and it's probably way, way worse now. This was a couple years ago, but last time I did the math, the top 1% alone could afford to buy the single family home market for like 12 years straight at a 50% premium to where current prices are today. And once you include the top 10%, it's like 50 years. So yeah, look, like the wealth inequality, I understand people want it to get, they think it can't possibly get worse than this, but it can always get worse. Housing can always get more unaffordable. The equity market can get even more overvalued. I'm not buying S&P or NASDAQ here, right? Like if you want to buy at a gazillion price to earnings, you know, ratio, then fine. You know, it can go up. If the dollar is melting, if the denominator is failing, which is what we are seeing, then yeah, sure. Equities in dollar terms can go higher. But the dollar just on a DXY basis has lost 11 or 12% of its value year to date. So look at the S&P in euros, right? It's a much different story, or the Swiss franc. Your currency is melting. Your currency, whether it be, homes denominated in dollars, or equities denominated in dollars, or gold or Bitcoin denominated in dollars. If the denominator is losing value, which it has been, the denominator is failing, you are going to get higher equity prices. You're going to get higher home prices. You're going to get higher Bitcoin, higher gold. And I think that's what we're seeing. I mean, I'll remind people just one more time. When you look at gold denominated in dollars, it is ripping higher right now. $37.19 is the per ounce price for gold in dollars, but remember, it's basically you're looking at an FX cross. You're looking at gold slash dollars. We'll invert the gold chart that you're looking at. And that is dollars denominated in gold. And that's what's happening to your currency in real purchasing power terms. It's more pronounced in gold than it is, say, housing. But that's what's happening. And look, like the last time that we went through, that we were in an era like this was really the 1960s, with, you know, political assassinations, cultural divides, all these sorts of things. And if you look at how assets performed during that time period, obviously Bitcoin was not around, equities went basically sideways from 65 to 80. So for 15 years, the dollar price of the S&P 500 basically went nowhere. In gold terms, the S&P 500 priced in gold, the equity market lost like 80, 85% of its value. You obviously had the Nixon shock in 1971 with the removal from the gold standard. But yeah, look, housing went up. The equity market went nowhere, and gold absolutely ripped faces, like absolutely ripped. I think it was like 800%, just in the best 5-year period within there. I think overall it was even larger than, I want to say it was like a 12x. So 1100%, 11,000%. So yeah, I think that's kind of, you know, a lot of people drawing parallels to political assassinations and the Charlie Kirk stuff. I would just point out last time we had populism, was 65 to 82. The last time we had cultural divides as bad as they are today, you had equities go nowhere. You had bonds get crushed, by the way. The 10-year yield was basically up and to the right that entire era. So bonds, you know, did horribly. The equity market in dollar terms went sideways. In gold terms, declined by 80%. It was actually over 80%. And gold just ripped faces. So I think that, you know, if you believe that is, you know, if you believe that we are in that kind of era, that is the closest analog to really look at. And that'll be a, you know, reflection of probably how things go here, which is, you know, absent the baby boom, of course, which I don't think we're going to get. You'll have dollar denominated assets go up. But once you look at it addressing the denominator issues, once you start denominating things in gold terms or Bitcoin terms, I think the picture is going to look a lot different. But wealth inequality can always get worse. And how it eventually settles out, right? Do we see a Zoomer revolt where they elect the new president of the United States on Discord, like they did in Nepal? I don't know. Maybe. Do we see Marie Antoinette-like scenes in Manhattan and D.C. and San Francisco and L.A.? Maybe. Do we see a peaceful, a political revolution of sorts? Maybe. I don't think so, unfortunately. But yeah, like it can get worse before it gets better, and I think it will get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, that denominator question is, I guess, what I have, which is, and we'll get to Captain Trips here in a second. But that denominator question really, I think, is what rings home. Too many people are still like totally not paying attention and denominating everything in dollars. And when you see assets ripping like they are continuously, even at, you know, PE ratios that are, I think historically
a bazillion.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like it gets ridiculous after a while. And when does Wall Street start to say, hey, this is just funny money. Like what we're measuring in no longer makes sense. And I do think, like, just to be fair, that the BlackRocks of the world, although we, you know, most of us don't like them, and think they're evil, which they've proven to be, I think, in certain terms, they have been, I think, starting to push this narrative, and they're not wrong. Captain Trips, go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Bob. Great points by Robert, and thanks for being here. I just wanted to touch on the 1970s. I don't know if it was Ray Dalio or maybe someone along those lines, but that equities and bonds do not do well in an inflationary environment. So we think money printer go burr. Okay, if you buy S&P 500 with your 401k, you're chilling. Actually, no, right? As Robert said, the most comparable scenario is the 70s, 1971, August 15th, Bretton-Woods agreement suspended convertibility to gold. In that following 9 years, so the 1970s decade, the S&P 500 went up about 50% nominally, not adjusted for inflation, nominally, while gold went from its statutory 35 an ounce, and it peaked at about $800 an ounce. So that's what, a 20X from peak to trough to peak. And bonds didn't do well either. So it's almost this illusion, like commodities did well in the 70s and gold, that maybe that's, you know, it's Bitcoin, gold. It's not doing the same thing that's worked since 1980. It's a reversion to a different paradigm, or the cycle is swinging back to that side of it. And that corporate profits and corporate performances aren't necessarily good when they're just printing money hand over fist.
Well, yeah, I will point out though that personal income as a share of M2 money supply actually went up from I think it was the mid 70s through the 90s. And you had corporate profits as a share of GDP actually go down. So yeah, it's not good for corporations. It's not good for, now look, we're in a different, era. You know, it's not, we shouldn't try and force that comparison with every single thing. But I think that there are a number of striking similarities. And I think, you know, Brett, the 1971 sort of currency, major monumental currency, change, is part of it. Like, I think that I still think that there's a pretty decent chance of a Mar-a-Lago court or some sort of currency, issue, that ends up getting addressed in the next decade.
Robert, and I agree. I think if you caveat it with the next 10 years, I agree. But I mean, isn't that just an admission of the catastrophic failure of the currency? And can't they model this out and see that this is coming? I mean,
they already did though.
Right. And so, but then this is the whole question of Fed independence, right? They have the models, they have the data, they have the details, they know where this is going. And I wonder, like, if you have any thoughts, like you mentioned this, election cycle, but I do think it's interesting that if the Fed does remain independent, they, you know, the Fed chair gets appointed for, I think it's a 10 plus year term, and then can hang on to a FRB seat, for longer if needed. Just curious to maybe hear your speculative thoughts on, any of that related to this, like, bigger context, which is that the currency is failing. We're seeing it maybe for some people it's in slow motion. I think for Bitcoiners, we're acutely aware of what's going on based on the news cycle and the performance of all of these assets.
Yeah. I mean, you had a guy who wrote an entire paper on how to address the kind of the, how to solve for Triffin's dilemma. He wrote an entire paper on it, in November 24. He's now on the Fed. Like, this is crazy times. You know what I mean? Like, we are living through, revolutionary, era. And also, it's not just Myron. It's not just the kind of Myron camp of people. It's even people like David Malpass, who was the former World Bank governor. There's a lot of talk about structural, massive reforms at the Fed. To reshape the Fed in a way that, helps the average Main Street small business versus, gazillion market cap, multinational bank, right? There's a lot of push for a huge, massive, meaningful reform of the Fed. Now, is it going to solve all of our problems? I don't think so. But like, we are living through that kind of, a classical fourth turning sort of environment where institutions are reshaped and negative real rates and, absorbing the Fed under the Treasury into the Treasury Department like it was, back in World War II. That's just one of the many, many ways that we'll probably see that, play out. I think that also you'll see, over the next decade or so, I think you'll see some of that. Why does the Fed need a reverse repo? Why is there no reverse repo facility, but for Main Street bank, Main Street, small businesses, right? Like, an effort to, pretend like they're trying to help. And look, maybe their intentions are good. Maybe they really are going to try to help, the average American, the average small business. But yeah, the growing talk within serious camps within kind of Wall Street, like David Malpass, for example, that there is a growing amount of discontent with the current institution. It's not coming just from populist, nationalist, MAGA sort of people. It's starting to kind of even become more broad than that.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Man, it's, as you can see, it's very complicated, and I think that there's no real apparent answers. I don't think anybody can really fix it at this point. You have lots of pressures. I don't know, man. I see this as I don't want to say the world is caving in, but I mean, you can truly see where this system just at some point just gives way and no longer really works. And it's why I think most people will come to the conclusion that, we can't fix this problem. And so we're just going to, go to a UBI system, where people, that we couldn't help through systemic changes, get support. And so wonder, if you have any thoughts on that or anybody else want to take this, any other direction here before
I think we eventually. Yeah, sorry, there's a delay maybe on my end, but yeah, no, I think eventually AI, robotics, I think that's coming at some point, UBI, kind of mass unemployment. I mean, we already have youth unemployment at 10%. That's how revolutions start. So, we're already seeing signs of it. I think it takes longer than people think to fully play out, but yeah, I do think that unfortunately that's kind of the general direction things are going.
Yeah, and you could see how this would be delivered through a central bank digital currency or maybe just a private CBDC that's where they try to market it that this isn't what they're doing. Tao, thanks for joining us, sir. Always happy to have you. See your hand. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. No, I just want to echo what Robert said earlier in regards to real estate and prices going up. Maybe you can't buy it, but there's a lot of buyers still out there. And I do believe, from a sort of personal anecdotal experience, I believe that, real estate is a really, your, particularly your primary residence, right? I think it's a very valuable asset. It's a hard asset. And I think one of the best assets, I think that will always be in demand because people always need a place to live and everybody is striving to say, hey, this is my home. This is my home. And I know there's been like a lot of talk about, oh, well, people moving to renting, cause it's more convenient, et cetera. They don't have to worry about property taxes, maintenance and all those other things. But I still do believe people are still pursuing real estate in their house. And that's why prices will continue to climb. I'm just going to give a quick example. In my neighborhood, it was just really recently where, it was just a plot of land. It wasn't even a house. It was just a plot of land that was not in a pretty, pretty nice area. And it was about only 10,000 square feet. That's it, 10,000 square feet. And it sold for $1 million in 2 weeks after listing. It wasn't like on the market that long. It was just like, hey, you know, here's a plot of land that, if you want to build a house on here in this neighborhood, it was sold for $1 million just like that. So I do believe real estate will be something that will continue to climb, especially in places that are just pretty attractive, like a decent neighborhood. I'm not talking about anything that's like, okay, super nice neighborhood or anything like that, but a decent neighborhood, people will be buying. And so, yeah, I just want to say that.
Yeah, housing is, one of those places people do store, their money. And I do think people still, not just want it from an asset, or wealth protection. It's not just a wealth protection mechanism. It's also for a lot of people status, right? People want to show off. It's like the flashy cars. So people have different drivers and, I do think, people are beginning to feel rich again, which again, I think Robert and the rest of us can laugh at because the denominator is what's messed up. And so I'll keep driving at that. I'm curious to see the tools that come out where it really helps people see. I mean, I think simply Robert's suggestion to measure all these things with gold as the denominator or Bitcoin as the denominator is, definitely a pertinent approach. But when do the masses begin to see it? That's the big question. And, I think we'll be here talking about this for a long time still. not sure if it happens fast, you know, all at once or it's a gradual thing, but you know, we've heard it said, this is a gradually and then all at once, type of situation. Did want to go around the horn, see if there are any, final thoughts from everybody today as we, kind of close this one out. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody, on this hump day. It's a little lighter, fun, and good to hear from a variety of speakers, including Robert, who, if you guys haven't checked out his YouTube, if you want more information, if you'd like to soak up all this macro stuff, he's got a great channel and always do appreciate his insights and expertise. But let's go around. Wade, I know we didn't get to all your comments. I think BFP had to jump, a couple others. Anything that you wanted to say kind of as parting words here for this morning?
No, actually, we got to all the defense production stuff really that I wanted to talk about. I do have serious concerns about the formulas that the government is using to calculate ongoing and future expenses due to inflation. And I really appreciate Robert for his thoughts and input on the matter.
Yeah, I mean, it harkens back to this idea of manipulation, right? Like everything's manipulated. And so if they can't fix the money, then they can fix the way things are measured. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is disseminated through the news and Wall Street and those things. And so, you know, I'll bring it back to what we've been saying over, especially the last week. But, you know, we're truth seekers here. Hopefully we're giving you guys good information, sometimes a little biased, but really we're looking at through it a lens, as we've been talking about, of Bitcoin. And hopefully we get you thinking. We give you some tools to build confidence and conviction in the asset that we think protects you from all of these bad and nasty things that are going on in the world, but also gives you tools to help others see the light. And I do appreciate everybody coming on. Anybody else? Neil, Captain Trips, Robert, Tao, anybody? Yeah, go ahead, Neil. Neil has no mic. maybe we can get him back on here in a second. You want to try it again, Neil? I think he's dropping. All right. Well, we're going to end it there, guys. This has been fun. It's always fun too, seeing the expertise, the abilities of everybody that is in these spaces, especially when I don't have much planned. I have some rough topics to go off of, some news, obviously. But in the busier times, it is sometimes difficult to do these spaces every day. Although, you know, don't feel sorry for me. I do like it as much as you do, I think. We're going to get Neil back up here, give him one last shot at it. He dropped, bringing him back up, hopefully. Maybe Eric can help me with that too. There you go.
You got me? You got me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I was just going to say, I enjoy listening to everyone throwing their two stats. Cause like, it reminds me of this, like the idea, like consilience or the convergence of evidence. Like no matter how you're approaching reality, what, like everything's pointing in the same direction. I mean, that should give you comfort in the fact that we're on the right track and we're all striving for truth, and I think we're well on our way.
Yeah, thanks for that. Good way to close it up, guys. Again, we'll do this tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern. Everybody's welcome. Civilians are welcome. Military veterans are welcome. Thank you guys for joining us. And you know what? I want you to have the best Wednesday ever, because guess what, guys? It's the only one you got. And I can promise you, you'll do that as long as you promise me one thing. That you don't shitcoin. It's like putting a .223 shell in a .30-06 rifle. And by the way, don't do that. You'll kill yourself.
Fiat currency is a store of value. We call them core. We call them core.